Although nostalgia mongers are trying to bring back the 70s, it remains perhaps the most maligned recent decade. Who really wants to bring back big collars, gold chains, polyester, and 8-track? Pagan Kennedy is a product of 70s pop culture. She spent ages 8 to 18 in the decade. In an attempt to make sense of the decade and its impact on her, she's written the new book Platforms, a microwaved cultural chronicle of the 1970s. Kennedy writes a column about zines for the Village Voice and publishes her own zine. She also has a new collection of short stories. As a kid, everything Kennedy learned about the counterculture, revolution, and hipness in general came from such contrived TV shows as The Partridge Family.
Hello world, hear the song that we're singing. Come on, get happy. A whole lot of loving is what we'll be bringing. We'll make you happy. We had a dream we'd go traveling together. We'd spread a little love and then we'll keep moving on. Something always happens whenever we're together. We get a happy feeling when we're singing a song.
I thought that out there somewhere there were suburban families who were in rock and roll bands and driving around in painted buses. I took it all, you know, pretty seriously. And but I mean, it's strange because we were getting kids who were 8 or 9 then were getting this weird popularized version of and commercial version of what hippie culture was. And there must have been some guys who were, you know, thinking up these ideas and thinking, you know, oh, yeah, well, we want to have a rock and roll band, but we've got to make it safe, so they've got to be a suburban family, and, you know, the mother can't have been divorced, so the father has to have died, and, you know, but when you're a kid, you're just absorbing these things without wondering where they came from, and...
What about the Brady Bunch? Did that make an impression on you?
Oh, yeah. And my mother, when they had preempted the Brady Bunch for a basketball game or something, she would call up the station and say, you know, I have, all our friends would come over, so she'd say, I have 5 girls here crying in tears because you're not showing the Brady Bunch. And she would just chew them out, you know. It meant so much to us. But I think for a lot of us, my family was pretty stable, but my mom had gone back to school. But a lot of people's parents were going through enormous changes. Their moms were going to work, and or their parents were getting divorced. And, you know, the Bradys, they were the dream parents for children because, you know, if Jan lost her diary, they would be scouring Southern California for it. They you know, scrutinized their children. They, and also they were had a large family, which during the 70s, families were getting much smaller. And so that the thing of the 6 kids, you know, seemed very exotic at the time, I think.
How did becoming a teenager compare to what television had prepared you for?
That's a good question. I mean, I think that's how I got so interested in pop culture, especially in the 70s. You got the feeling that everything interesting had happened in the 60s and that when I was 12, I really thought that I would grow up and become a hippie. And then I'd be lying in front of cars, you know, protesting the war and you know, wearing disreputable clothes and putting flowers in my hair. And by the time I was 16, you know, that just didn't exist. Everybody was going to the mall and there was no war, thank God. But I just sort of felt like, wait a second, you know, I think a lot of us felt really cheated. And I think it's sad that we couldn't feel better about what was going on then and sort of look around and find each other. And, you know, of course, punk finally came along, but it was a little too late for me.
You're in your early 30s now. What do you think of the whole Generation X thing? Do you see that as a completely manufactured identity?
It's disturbing sometimes because when they start talking about Generation X simply as a target market. they being advertisers. But I think there's something real. They're also called, our group, or the group that's a little younger than me, is also called the Slackers, which I think is maybe a better term. It's actually a relief to have our generation, I see myself at the upper end of it, but our generation recognized by the media, because I just found it really frustrating to spend the 80s hearing about how all we wanted was to, climb the ranks of the corporation, when I didn't know a single person who was doing that. And in fact, everybody I knew, if they got a high-paying job, would just work as long as they could stand it and then drop out and live off of their savings. And so I didn't understand where that stereotype was coming from.
Well, you seem kind of like an achiever yourself. Did you think of yourself as a slacker?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I actually supported myself for years by working as a technical copy editor. But I would just do that as little as I had to. And I would, it's only recently that I own a car, in fact, because I always saw car ownership as a form of slavery, because you really have to have a job to have a car. And I was happy to live as simply as possible if it meant I didn't have to work. So that anti-work ethic I see in a lot of my friends. And of course, we're all doing interesting things on the side.
Did you resent the baby boomer generation when you were growing up because that generation got so much attention?
I don't think I resented them when I was a teenager, because they really did and still do control the media. And it's, as I said, when I was a teen, it seemed like I think we thought nothing interesting was happening to us, and we lived in this dead period, because that's how the boomers felt. I mean, they were in their 20s. They were kind of in, their early 30s, and they were feeling like they were a little lost after the 60s, or that, and I think we were in a really important point in our lives, but because we were being told that that's what was going on, that, nothing was happening, which became the cliche about the 70s, that nothing happened. I think we believed that. But then in the 80s, with 30-something and all the other boomer shows, it began to get a little tiresome. It's like, when are we going to see it? I really want to see myself reflected in the media. It just seemed like you could scream and scream and you wouldn't be heard.
You feel distanced from the baby boom controlled mass media. You're part of a movement of very independent small publications called zines. What's the difference between a zine and a magazine?
Usually, it's hard to define, but usually a zine is put out by one person and distributed by that same person. Often it's Xeroxed and also written and edited by the same person, or maybe some of their friends help out. And it's an underground way of distributing information, or if you're a writer getting published, you can just, instead of trying to send your stuff out, you can just do it yourself. And I put out a zine for years, and you start getting people who you don't know, and they're starting to read all about your life, and then they write you letters. And so it's a weird kind of merging of the public and private worlds.
Would you describe your zine for us?
I did. For years, I did a zine called Pagan's Head, and it's now going to be made into a book by St. Martin's Press. And I would just mythologize my life. And after a couple issues, it started to feel like there was me, the pagan Kennedy, live my life. And then there was this mythological pagan who would have these adventures in the zine. I mean, I would write about something really boring, but, going to a party or something, and then turned it into this adventure. And then after a while, it started to seem like that pagan that I had created began to take over my life. I'd find myself turning into her. So it was this very weird, I almost felt like it was performance art or something.
You know, a lot of the zines I've seen are very difficult to read. Sometimes the lettering is really small, or even when it's really big, there's paragraphs going in every different direction with graphics bleeding over into the letters. And, you could really get a headache if you actually try to read it.
Right.
Do you have any explanation for that?
I actually love the way some of those look. Some of them are much too daunting, but I love the feeling you get of people who are totally frenzied. They have 5 cups of coffee, and they're sitting there with their friends and thinking, wouldn't it be great if we did this, you know? And I just love that feeling of the spontaneity and the immediacy of the form that you don't get in books or traditional magazines. And I don't think they're meant to be read from cover to cover. They're meant to be sort of picked up and, you know, little bits looked at. And so I actually don't mind that too much.
Well, Peggy Kennedy, I want to thank you a lot for talking with us.
Thank you.
Pagan Kennedy is the author of Platforms, a microwaved cultural chronicle of the 70s. This is Fresh Air.